The headlines. Iran's leader Ayatollah Khamenei calls for the punishment of those behind the assassination of one of the country's top nuclear scientists. Iran's President Hassan Rouhani slams the assassination of an Iranian nuclear scientist, saying that it will not slow down his country's scientific progress. And Iran tells the UN that there are serious indications that Israel is responsible for the assassination of one of its top nuclear scientists. Thanks for joining us. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyed-Ali Khamenei, has called for the punishment of those involved in the assassination of top Iranian scientist Mohsen Fakhrizadeh. In a statement, Ayatollah Khamenei said that Fakhrizadeh was killed by criminal and ruthless mercenaries. He said that efforts should be made to follow up on the technical and scientific activities of this scientist. The leader also expressed condolences on his martyrdom. Meanwhile, the Iranian president says the assassination of the country's top nuclear scientist, Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, shows the enemy's desperation in the face of Iran's scientific progress. Hassan Rouhani said the terrorist act also indicates the enemy's failures on political fronts in the region, as well as across the world. He noted the assassination of the Iranian scientist also suggests the extent of the enemy's malice and grudge towards the Islamic Republic. Rouhani reiterated that such terror acts will not weaken Iranians' will to move on the path of scientific development. Rather, he added that it will make the Iranian nation more resolute. Some additional statements coming from Iran's leader on this, Ayatollah Khamenei calling for definitive punishment of perpetrators behind the assassination of the Iranian scientist. So Iran's leader has called for what's called a definitive punishment for the perpetrators. Well, Iran says there are serious indications of Israel's involvement in the assassination of the top Iranian nuclear scientist and the deputy defense minister, Mohsen Fakhrizadeh. Iran's ambassador to the UN made the comment in a letter to the world body's chief and the president of the UN Security Council. Majid Taftarawanchi urged them to strongly condemn the assassination and take the necessary measures against the perpetrators. He also warned against any U.S. and Israeli adventurism against his country. Taftarawanchi said the Islamic Republic reserves the right to defend its people and to secure its national interests.
The assassination of Iran's top nuclear scientist Mohsen Fakhrizadeh has caused outrage in the country, with officials blaming Israel for the terrorist attacks and pledging retaliation. Iranian President Hassan Rouhani called Fakhrizadeh's assassination a proof of enemy's desperation.
This terrorist act indicates the enemy's failures in political fronts in the region as well as across the world. The assassination of the scientist suggests the extent of enemy's malice and grudge toward Iran's scientific capabilities and achievements. The killing of figures like Fakhrizadeh will not weaken Iran's will to move toward scientific development and progress. Rather, it makes Iranians more resolute in their path.
Chief of Staff of the Iranian Armed Forces, Major General Mohammad Bagheri, said harsh revenge awaits the terrorist elements and all those behind the assassination. Chief of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, Major General Hossein Salami, said retaliation and harsh punishment for the perpetrators are already on the agenda. Salami said the terrorist act was plotted and directed by the Israeli regime. In a tweet, Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif said there were serious indications of an Israeli role in the assassination. Fakhrizadeh's name was mentioned multiple times in a 2018 presentation by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, where he repeated Tel Aviv's baseless allegations against Tehran's nuclear program.
A key part of the plan was to form new organizations to continue the work. This is how Dr. Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, head of Project Ahmad, put it. Remember that name, Fakhrizadeh.
The New York Times also quoted three intelligence officials as saying that Israel was behind the terrorist attack. Hossein Dehghan, a military advisor to the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, said Israel is seeking to intensify pressure on Iran with the aim of provoking a full-fledged war. The former defense minister said Iran will descend like lightning on the killers of the country's scientists and will make them regret their actions. The head of the Iranian judiciary's High Council for Human Rights said Fakhrizadeh's assassination was aimed at hindering the country's scientific progress.
What is noteworthy from my point of view about the assassination attempt made today in Tehran was that there is a serious will by the Iranians' enemy to prevent the improvement and advancement of the Iranian people. They are going to put hurdles on our way.
Fakhrizadeh was also leading a team tasked with developing one of Iran's first kits for coronavirus diagnosis. The plot to assassinate him was not the first, as he had survived several such attempts in the past years. Four other Iranian nuclear scientists were assassinated between 2010 and 2012, with Tehran and Western intelligence agencies blaming Israel for those killings. The Israeli terror campaign has been widely seen as a project to stymie Iran's peaceful nuclear activities, which have been under the intense scrutiny of the International Atomic Energy Agency.
Political scientist Sayed Mohammad Morandi says that Iran needs to give a firm and proportionate response to the assassination of the Iranian scientist.
That Iran has to be firm and it has to respond. It has to punish those who carry out assassinations and murder, because the only way to stop it is to be strong in the face of a cowardly enemy. So I think it's both of these combined. We have to work our hardest to create this awareness that when it comes to human rights, it's Western regimes that are supporting terrorist organizations like the MEK, yet they speak about humanity and human rights. So they are creating a starvation in Yemen, yet they preach to us about human rights. They are preventing Iranians from purchasing medicine, yet they speak about civilization. This all has to be pointed out to a global audience as much as possible.
Former head of Iran's Atomic Energy Organization, Fereydoun Abbasi, says the aim of assassinating figures like Mohsen Fakhrizadeh is to block Iran's path to progress.
It is a common target. They are going to put fear into our society in order to stop our research, strategic research, which is going to overshadow our improvements and achievements. They are going to put fear in our community by assassinating some elites in order to push us into negotiations with them. But as of past, we are going to resist strongly against these pressures, and our country is not dependent on an individual.
The United Nations Special Rapporteur on Extrajudicial Executions says that the assassination of Iranian scientist Mohsen Fakhrizadeh is a violation of international human rights law.
An extraterritorial targeted killing outside an armed conflict is a violation of international human rights law prohibiting the arbitrary deprivation of life and a violation of the UN Charter prohibiting the use of force extraterritorially in times of peace.
Former director of the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency has also described the assassination of Iran's top nuclear scientist as a highly reckless criminal act. In a series of tweets, John Brennan said that Fakhrizadeh's murder risks lethal retaliation and a new round of regional conflict. Meanwhile, the Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah condemned Fakhrizadeh's murder as a heinous attack sponsored by the U.S. and Israel. Hezbollah's deputy leader also stressed that the assassination was part of a war on Iran and the region. Sheikh Naim Wassam said that the response to the murder is in Iran's hands. Yemen's Ansarullah and the Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement also condemned the attack. The U.S. Secretary of State says Washington will continue to use sanctions against foreign suppliers that provide missile-related materials and technology to Iran. Mike Pompeo's comments came after the U.S. imposed economic sanctions on two Chinese and two Russian firms that Washington claims have supported the development of Iran's missile program. Pompeo said these companies are accused of, quote, transferring sensitive technology and items to Iran. He noted that they will be subject to restrictions on U.S. government aid and on their exports for 2 years. Meanwhile, China said it had lodged stern representations with the U.S. over the sanctions. Beijing stressed that it would firmly safeguard its legitimate rights and interests. Iran's President Hassan Rouhani says recent restrictive measures have been effective in slowing down the coronavirus outbreak in the country. Rouhani hailed the nation's contribution and urged the people to help raise the awareness about the disease. He also called on the people to take the virus seriously and to pay more attention to measures like self-isolation. Rouhani underlined that indoor gatherings have proven to be very contagious. He said the gatherings of more than 15 people is prohibited in cities categorized as red. Touching upon the restrictions, Rouhani emphasized that businesses may resume their activities after the current partial lockdown. However, he said that this does not mean returning to normalcy, which will not be possible any sooner than March. Thousands of protesters have taken to the streets of the French city of Nantes to decry a controversial security bill that bans sharing the images of police officers. Brief clashes erupted as police fired tear gas to disperse the crowd. Protesters voiced opposition to the global security bill, which, if passed, would illegalize filming and photographing officers on duty with malicious purposes. It would also require the faces of law enforcement forces to be blurred upon publication by ordinary citizens or the media. The proposed legislation has drawn fierce criticism and has sparked a wave of protests earlier this week in several French cities, including the capital, Paris. Protesters say the new law would give more autonomy to local police to use brutal tactics. Concerns over violent policing have surfaced once again in France after CCTV captured three officers violently assaulting a black man over coronavirus face mask. Murtaza Jaffer takes a closer look as France continues to struggle with its policing of minorities.
Outrage in France after police are filmed savagely beating a black music producer at his studios after accusing him of not wearing a face mask. A criminal inquiry has been launched following the 13-minute assault, which left the victim with a deep gash to the head and a torn tendon. Fearing for his safety, the victim has asked to be identified by his first name only and has said he was racially abused by the officers who used the N-word repeatedly. Police originally arrested Michael for not wearing a face mask, but later charged him with assault.
I'm sorry to say this, but my client had the luck of having these videos to report these acts, which are isolated but still exist. If we didn't have them, he would have been detained, because it's his word against the officers. We know perfectly that it's the words of the officers that holds.
During the ordeal, Michael was also put into a chokehold, which raised further outrage. Campaigners have long been trying to have the move outlawed after a number of deaths in police custody.
The pictures are unspeakable. They're extremely shocking. And as soon as I found out about them, about what happened, I asked for the police officers to be suspended. And as soon as the facts are established by the courts, because there is an investigation, I will ask for these police officers to be dismissed. They have sullied the uniform of the Republic.
A separate inquiry has been launched after police raided a refugee camp in central Paris. The Interior Minister's office described the scenes as shocking. France is in the midst of a battle over policing. Last week, President Emmanuel Macron's government introduced a new security bill, making it illegal to publish images of officers that might subject them to, quote, physical or psychological harm. Human rights groups are outraged, accusing authorities of censorship, giving police the freedom to use disproportionate force. The incident follows a string of racist profiling and discrimination in the policing of the coronavirus lockdown. Earlier this year, two youths lost their lives in incidents involving police, which led to days of unrest in suburbs populated by minority communities.
The EU and the UK say that there are still major stumbling blocks to achieve a post-Brexit trade deal, with time quickly running out for an agreement. The British Prime Minister Boris Johnson said the two sides are still seeking to bridge, quote, substantial and important differences. He tried to shift the burden of responsibility for reaching an agreement on the EU, saying that a deal can be struck if they want to do it. Meanwhile, the EU chief negotiator Michel Barnier said the same significant divergences persist in the talks. One EU diplomat also said that there are only a few days left for the talks. Face-to-face Brexit trade talks will resume in London this weekend as the December 31st deadline looms. The negotiations are still centered on three main issues, namely fishing, state aid, and dispute resolution. Religious leaders call for greater efforts by EU authorities to tackle growing levels of Islamophobia and anti-Semitism across the 27-nation bloc. During a video conference organized by the European Commission, they also criticized the EU's treatment of refugees. Jerome Hughes reports.
Despite the apparent demise of the Trump era, it is clear that the far-right movement in the West is still alive and well. White supremacy, racism and xenophobia are problems in every EU country.
But this is the end! It's the end! Enough's enough!
Coordinated by the European Commission Brussels, religious leaders from all of the main faiths have just taken part in a video conference.
Reports of anti-Semitic and anti-Muslim attacks are now almost part of everyday life in our beloved Europe.
The leaders say the answer is to show more unity and greater mutual respect.
I want to say that if somebody hurts a Muslim sister, a Jewish brother, they are hurting me.
The European Union's much-criticized asylum policy also came under the spotlight during the event.
Europe loses its soul if we continue to watch people drowning in the Mediterranean. That is why we support civil rescue missions.
Religious leaders insist the European Union must do more to ensure refugees play a positive and productive role in society. Experts agree.
There were mistakes in integration of the migrants, and there were mistakes in education, or lack of education, or lack of access to the educational system.
In the past, Saudi Arabia has been criticized for sponsoring terrorism in the EU. The European Commission says it is easier to brainwash vulnerable young men when they do not feel part of a community.
This sense of belonging would be the best shield against radicalization, terrorism, and hatred.
Work is continuing to try and curtail terrorist recruitment online in the EU. However, sociologists believe that is not the root cause of the security issue.
They say the source of the problem is not the internet, but the current climate within society. The focus should be on changing that, they argue. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
An appeals court in the U.S. state of Pennsylvania has rejected a lawsuit by President Donald Trump's campaign to challenge the state's presidential election results. Federal judges in Pennsylvania say that there aren't any specific allegations and proof to call the November 3rd election unfair. They say the claims of voter fraud have no merit. This is the latest setback dealt to the Republican president's legal bid to overturn the polls. Trump's lawyers have vowed to appeal to the Supreme Court. The U.S. president has so far refused to concede to his Democratic rival Joe Biden. Trump, however, has said that he will leave the White House if the Electoral College votes go for Biden next month. That's all the time we have for this edition of World News. So bye-bye for now. Thank you.
are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The veteran Watergate reporter Carl Bernstein has publicly named 21 Republican senators he says have repeatedly expressed extreme contempt for Donald Trump and his fitness for office. As President Trump continued to try to subvert the results of a presidential election he clearly lost to Joe Biden, Carl Bernstein said on Twitter he was not violating any pledge of journalistic confidentiality. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian columnist Martin Pengelly. The piece is titled, Bernstein Names 21 Republican Senators Who Privately Expressed Contempt for Trump. Stay with us for more of Martin Pengelly's article. The veteran Watergate reporter Carl Bernstein has publicly named 21 Republican senators he says have repeatedly expressed extreme contempt for President Donald Trump and his fitness for office. As Trump continued to try to subvert the results of a presidential election he clearly lost to Joe Biden, Carl Bernstein said on Twitter he was not violating any pledge of journalistic confidentiality. Carl Bernstein's information, he said, came from colleagues, staff members, lobbyists, and White House aides. Carl Bernstein names Rob Portman of Ohio, Lamar Alexander of Tennessee, Ben Sass of Nebraska, Roy Blunt of Missouri, Susan Collins of Maine, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, John Cornyn of Texas, John Thune of South Dakota, Mitt Romney of Utah, Mike Braun and Todd Young of Indiana, Tim Scott of South Carolina, Rick Scott and Marco Rubio of Florida, Chuck Grassley of Iowa, Richard Burr of North Carolina, Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania, Martha McSally of Arizona, Jerry Moran and Pat Roberts of Kansas, and Richard Shelby of Alabama. The list contained senior Republican figures such as Thune, the Majority Whip, Mark Rubio, Acting Chair of the Intelligence Committee, and Chuck Grassley, a former Judiciary Committee chair. Some senators on Carl Bernstein's list, like Ben Sass, John Cornyn, Susan Collins, and Lisa Murkowski, among them, have criticized Donald Trump publicly. Mitt Romney, Marco Rubio, Lisa Murkowski, Pat Toomey and Susan Collins have recognized Joe Biden as president-elect. Carl Bernstein, a 76-year-old veteran journalist, worked with Bob Woodward on the Washington Post coverage of the Watergate scandal, which led to the resignation of President Richard Nixon in 1974. Bob Woodward's coverage of Donald Trump has produced two best-selling books, Fear and Rage, which have relied on unnamed sources highly critical of Donald Trump, and in the latter case, the president's own on-record and highly damaging thoughts. Speaking to CNN on Friday, Carl Bernstein said, "Many, if not most of these individuals, from what I have been told, were happy to see Donald Trump defeated in this election, as long as the Senate could be controlled by the Republicans. That outcome now hinges on two runoff elections in Georgia on 5th of January. A spokesman for Rick Scott told Forbes the list was dumb and doesn't warrant a real response. Needless to say, Carl Bernstein has no idea what he's talking about. But Bernstein wrote that, with few exceptions, the senator's craven public silence has helped enable Donald Trump's most grievous conduct, including undermining and discrediting the U.S. electoral system."
The debate.
A senior Iranian defense official is assassinated near the capital, Tehran, in a terrorist attack. In a statement, the defense ministry said the vehicle of the head of the Organization of Defensive Innovation and Research, Mr. Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, was targeted by terrorists. The Iranian foreign minister, Mohammad Javad Zarif, said the act of cowardice shows the desperate warmongering of its perpetrators, adding that there are serious indications of an Israeli role in the assassination. Zarif also urged the international community, especially the EU, to end, quote, their shameful double standards, and condemns the Iranian defense official's assassination. Between 2010 and 2012, four other Iranian nuclear scientists were assassinated. Tehran and Western intelligence agencies have long put the blame on Israel, an accusation that was never rejected by officials of the Israeli regime. And this debate will be looking further into that issue. We're now joined by journalist and political analyst Elijah Magnier, who's joining us from Brussels, also with us on this debate. We have author and political analyst Mr. Saeb Shath joining us from Belfast. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. Magnier in Brussels. What was your initial reaction when you heard the news, and who do you believe to be behind such acts against Iran?
Well, Prime Minister Netanyahu said he has reached several achievements this week. He can't share all the details with us. That is typical of this particular Israeli Prime Minister, to show off and disregard the deniability previously adopted by Israeli MPs for many years, when they carry out target killing or assassination abroad. Netanyahu also, he is under domestic scrutiny with a very strong possibility to face the Court of Justice. He's accused not only of corruption but also bribery, particularly related to the submarine and missile purchase that is around $2 billion. And this is where the Israeli Minister of Defense, Benny Gantz, accuse him and form a committee. So he has all the interest to escape toward a possible war or a battle or any act similar to the one he has committed today. And also Israel is aware that Iran is not in a position to retaliate with a full all-out war when the attack is not that big to deserve to put the whole Middle East into a stage of war. That, particularly when the assassination of the Iranian professor today won't change much in Iran's nuclear or ballistic missile program. This is why Israel may find the audacity not only to carry out the target assassination, but also to hit more targets in Iran in the future or carry out more assassination, knowingly that Tehran is aware that President Trump is eager to do something before he leaves office on the 20th of January 2021. So yes, Israel is trying to drag Iran and the Middle East into direct confrontation, and we know that the Americans leaked the information of the arrival of the U.S. B-52 toward the Middle East and the U.S. fleet in the Mediterranean that is ready. And there is a generous support from many Gulf countries, particularly Saudi Arabia, that are ready to support and finance Israel, particularly with the latest normalization with Israel. So we do not exclude that the meeting between Netanyahu and Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, Saudi Arabia, on the Red Sea, beginning of this week, was not a normalization of the relationship that already exists since many years, but it has not been announced, but it was under the table coordination and informative military hit against Iran.
Saeb Shath, your thoughts on the issue? What are the motives behind carrying out such acts of terrorism?
From the day one that the West planted the Zionist entity in the heart of historical Palestine, and the Zionist entity carries out targeted killings and assassination mainly against Arab and Muslim scientists. We witnessed that in Egypt in the 50s, 60s, 70s. The same thing goes in Syria and Iraq. Iran from the 70s, 1979 onwards. They want to make sure these countries will stay undeveloped, underdeveloped, and they are backwards, and they cannot industrialize themselves, and they cannot catch up with the Western progress, and they cannot even be sufficient in fulfilling the needs of their own population or the needs of defending their country. So because they are in the heart of the world in the Middle East, their wealth and their geopolitical areas is controlled by the Zionist entity in the West. This is the target, and Israel to stay supreme. We witnessed from 1979 the Iranian elites and scientists being targeted from after the break of the revolution. Since Shah of Iran was a Western puppet, they needed him and they didn't target him. But since the Iranian become sovereign over their decision after the Islamic revolution in Iran, and Iran becomes targeted, becomes sanctioned, and become besieged to destabilize the revolution and to loot after that the world. This is the target. Your guest touched on issues which I want to expand a little bit on here. There was a meeting between the Zionists and the Saudis and the Americans in Saudi Arabia just shortly. And we want to see these three developments which indicates to more actions against Iran. The first one was by the Zionist media itself, a well-known newspaper which is close to the intelligence apparatus in there. It's confirmed there was instructions issued to the army leadership to be prepared and on a standby in anticipation of any development or offensive to be launched against Iran. This is a few days ago. The second one, the U.S. military command, as your guest said, dispatched the B-52 bomber equipped with a giant bombs that can penetrate bunkers to destroy nuclear facilities within deep in the mountains, like they say, fruits in Iran. The third point, which is their meeting in Rome in the Red Sea between Pompeo and bin Salman and the Zionist the Prime Minister Netanyahu, when they wanted to tackle the issue of Iran, they wanted to make sure there is an action planned against Iran and going to be taken in place, and they want to abort any attempts by President-elect Joe Biden to rejoin the Iran nuclear agreements. The last point I want to make in here, the fingerprint of the attack on Mohsen Fakhreddin was the professor shows the advanced, capable, sophisticated intelligence agency who can trigger an explosion and then target the man with fire to make sure he will be gunned down, died by the explosion or gunned down. This is a sophisticated operation. It shows all the fingerprints and the signs of the Zionist entity or sophisticated intelligence agency.
Mr. Magnier, having in mind the Israeli threats in the past, what's also alarming here in this situation is that just recently Mohsen Fakhrizadeh was mentioned in a video report by the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. It's not too difficult to connect the dots here, is it?
Absolutely. It is quite obvious, particularly when we see also President Trump retweeting a former Mossad officer who spoke about the assassination of Professor Mohsen Fakhrizadeh and confirming that he was on the Mossad target list since quite some time. And as your guest rightly said, the professor was responsible for the development of nuclear and ballistic missiles. The team that attacked was highly professional, planned. They put a car bomb to stop the driver, and that exploded a few meters ahead. And then a team of attackers decided to attack because they are trained to carry out such an assassination against a target. And it is highly possible the coordination with foreign intelligence services to rehearse this attack. So, however, the removal of one person never stopped a country from carrying out its objective. On the contrary, the assassination of a nuclear scientist and the four nuclear scientists before only give more incentive for Iran to motivate it and increase its nuclear enrichment program and develop missiles that reach a distance beyond the 2,000 kilometers. And we also have to bear in mind that President Trump has a personal vendetta against Iran. Trump tried to contact Iran 8 times and failed. He was waiting by the phone and the Iranians never called him up. He advised Iran to make a deal weeks before the election to add it to his achievement and increase his chances to win a second term. But because he didn't win, Trump would like to make sure, as your guest said, Trump wants the president-elect Joe Biden to be unable to abide by the nuclear deal signed by President Obama in 2015, and that he shredded and want to put obstacles in front of any attempt by Biden administration to return to the deal. By pushing Iran to retaliate and leave office in the midst of a possible war in case Iran hit back Israel or hit U.S. bases in the Middle East, Trump and Israel and Saudi Arabia want to guarantee the non-return to the nuclear deal. They want to eliminate the Iran voice for the right of the Palestinians, for the right of the axis of the resistance to exist, for the right of people to live without the U.S. dominance, imperialism in the region. However, it's very difficult to drag Iran into a war face-to-face unless there is real bombing of its nuclear sites by foreign force. Iran is expected to exert control and avoid being dragged to a battlefield where the timing and the terms are dictated by the enemies. So we have to wait and see. I don't think Iran would be just impulsive reactive in this case.
Safshath, Commander Hossein Dehghan, a military advisor to Iranian leader Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, is accused Israel of killing the Iranian nuclear scientist to try to provoke a war. He said, quote, in the last days of the political life of their ally Donald Trump, the Zionists seek to intensify pressure on Iran to create a full-blown war. Do you see a relation there Trump, Netanyahu, and the terrorist attack in Iran earlier today.
Yes, I see the relation very clearly myself, especially the professor was a prominent scientist who was a leader in his research and innovation of defense industry for Iran. And we seen how Iran reacted to the assassination of the late General Lieutenant General Soleimani when they attacked Ain al-Assad and other American bases in Iraq, and the Americans couldn't retaliate. And later on, we discovered from American media and American even members of the Democratic Party said that most of the soldiers, which they said they weren't injuries, all of them have head injuries, and most of them, you know, like damaged, totally damaged, his damage. And the other point in here, the Americans will want Israel to attack. They want the Saudis to be involved in like an attrition war against Iran. The Americans, from the lesson which they've been learned from the attack of Ain al-Assad, they didn't mobilize that a great force to attack Iran. They just want to pressurize Iran, and they want to show America is still in a fighting mood. But they cannot do it. We witnessed one rocket, the Houthis movement, launched a couple of days ago, which is flies low, and no radars, no sophisticated weaponry the Americans have in Saudi Arabia even spotted that one rocket which destroyed the Aramco's station fired by the Houthis, which puts two. This is compared to the Iranian sophisticated weaponry is nothing. So they knew what they are facing. They cannot launch a war in Iran, but they are playing dirty, dirty games in there. They just want to stabilize the region. They want to make sure things are very bad to the president-elect Biden, and he cannot rejoin the Iranian nuclear deal because they want to create a further animosity with the Democrats now, so they cannot sit with the Iranian and reschedule the American rejoining of the nuclear deal. This is what the Americans and the Israelis do, and the Saudis desperate to do that because they know the next administration will be targeting their human rights record, their involvement in the war in Yemen, and a lot of other things.
Elijah Magnier, the U.S., the Saudis, the Israelis, they've been very open and vocal about not wanting Iran's nuclear energy program to excel. Why do you think they are threatened by Iran's progress?
Because since 1979, President Carter imposed sanctions on Iran because Iran refused to submit, because Iran is not accepting the U.S. dominance over the Middle East and over Iran itself, because Iran has allies in the region that think in the same way. Iran support the Palestinian cause, support the freedom of the Lebanese, support non-regime change in Syria, support the unity of Iraq, while Biden and President Trump wanted to divide the country. I don't think there is a difference between Trump and Biden, at the exception of Biden is a more expert and more diplomat than Trump, but both are considering Iran as an enemy. Hillary Clinton said it clearly. And they consider Iran as an enemy because Iran is causing trouble to Israel. Iran is supporting the Palestinians in their cause. If the Palestinians want the right to return to their land, they want their territory back. They don't want to be under the dominance of the Israelis. They want their claim that they have been taken since 1947. And they don't want the Americans to dominate an area that is 10,000 kilometers away from the United States of America. This is why Iran is an enemy. And in Iran is an enemy because in Iran there are democratic elections in the country, while in any other Arab state, and particularly Gulf country, it is ruled by a monarchy. There are no democratic elections. But that is secondary. The main problem of Iran is support to the Palestinian state. If Iran stops support to Palestine, then all the problems of Iran will be solved. However, Iran has written in its constitution the support of all oppressed people in the world above all the Palestinian cause. It cannot violate its own commitment, the commitment that has been taken upon itself to support the right cause of all the population. And that is the main problem of Iran. And this is why they want Iran a shark without teeth.
So, Ashraf, let's talk about another matter that has been brought up a lot today. And that's the issue of the lack of condemnation. Iran's foreign minister, Zarif, he urged the international community, especially the EU, to end, quote, their shameful double standards and condemn the Iranian defense officials' assassination. Why is there such hypocrisy in this case? And are you surprised by the lack of condemnation and lack of outrage?
No, I'm not surprised. And I think some of the Western intelligence agencies were helping the Mossad at some stages in achieving such targeted killings. Since Iran today is inherited the position which Nasser of Egypt, the revolutionary leader of Egypt in the 60s, found himself in, anti-imperialist, leading the region anti-imperialist campaign. So today, the Iranian revolution is carrying on the same agenda which is Egypt, revolutionary Egypt in the 60s used to do, leading a leading figure in third world countries against imperialism and against the oppressor and supporting the oppressed people. This is what Iran's today, as your guest said himself, I agree 100%. And when Iran finds itself behind the Palestinian and supporting the Palestinian, this is for the Zionist entity is disturbing. Since they launched their wars from 1948 till the invasion of Lebanon in 1982 and follows against anybody supporting the Palestinians or the Palestinian movements. The Arab Springs, or what they call it Arab Springs, was targeted against countries which supported Palestine. Rightly, Iran today finds itself behind the Palestinian cause, behind Hezbollah, and the leading figure, and the leading country, actually, of the resistance camp, which is stand against the imperialism and its function state, the Zionist entity, Israel. And all the Arab reactionary regimes, which are the satellites of the Zionist entity and the Americans' imperialism. So this is why Iran is targeted, and this is why you see the Western countries who implanted the Zionist entity in there to weaken the region and to help the West in controlling these ex-colonies and suck their wealth and make sure they are open market to its own goods. They want that this situation to continue, these countries to be weaker. When they assassinate Iranian scientists, it means to them that will put Iran back in a backward position.
One last question for both of our guests. Elijah Magnier, what should Iran's response be? Different viewpoints suggest these terrorist acts will only make Iran more adamant in confronting its antagonists.
I think Iran should continue in its nuclear program, should continue its enrichment and to raise the percentage and to go toward full nuclear cycle without the necessity to make a bomb. But that will make Iran stronger. I think Iran should continue with its missile program to go beyond the 2,000 and reach the 5,000 kilometers. And I think Iran should not retaliate now and give Trump the possibility to have his little war in the last few weeks in power.
Okay, Saab Shath, same question for you. What should Iran's response be?
Iran's retaliation should be in industrialize more, in educating more, in furthering the industries, in making the life of their own people more secure, and in furthering the security and defense industry. This way Iran will win. And that's where we see the Americans couldn't revenge against the attacks of the Iranian missiles in Iran.
All right, thanks a lot, gentlemen. That's all the time we have for tonight's debate. Allow me to thank my guest, journalist and political analyst Elijah Magnier, joining us from Brussels. Also thanks to author and political analyst Saab Shath, speaking to us from Belfast. Also, a special thanks to you for staying with us on this debate. Goodbye, everybody.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Welcome to our program The Key here at IRIB English Radio. I'm your host, Shiraz Agha. Thank you for joining us here today. Today we're going to be examining a question and looking at a very important problem that people often ask, and that is the question about how we can reconcile the belief that God is the creator of all things with the belief that there are other causes and agents in the world besides God. Both of these, it should be noted that both of these ideas are affirmed and can be confirmed by religious texts. For example, in some of the verses of the Holy Quran, we see that it has been mentioned that God is the creator of all things. For example, in Surah An'am, verse 101, God says, بِسْمِ اللَّهِ وَخَلَقَ كُلَّ شَيْءٍ God created all things. Other verses are also present in the Quran which affirm this basic religious proposition. At the same time, there are many verses in the Holy Quran which also affirm other causes besides God. For example, in Surah Baqarah, verse 22, we have the following verse. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. وَأَنزَلَ مِنَ السَّمَاءِ مَاءً فَأَخْرَجَ بِهِ مِنَ السَّمَرَاتِ رِزْقًا لَكُمْ. God says that and He sent down from the sky water, and by means of this water He brought forth fruit and sustenance for you. So we see that in this verse God ascribes the blossoming and bearing of fruit to water. He describes water as being an agent and a cause in the production of this effect. In Surah Rum, verse 48, God says the following. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Allahu alladhi yursil ar-riyaha fatuthiru sahaban fayabsutuhu fis-sama kayfa yasha. That God is the one who sends the winds. So these winds, they move the clouds and scatter them in the sky as He so wishes. This verse ascribes the scattering of the clouds in the sky to wind. So it describes this being as being an agent in the production of this effect. Or for example, in Surah Hajj, verse 5, we have the following verse. وَتَرَى الْأَرْضَ حَامِدَةً فَإِذَا أَنزَلْنَا عَلَيْهَا الْمَاءَ اهْتَزَّتْ وَرَبَتْ وَأَنْبَتَتْ مِنْ كُلِّ زَوْجٍ بَهِيجٍ. This verse is also very explicit in the idea that water it plays a role and has an effect on the vegetation of the earth, in the production of vegetation, and in the production of fruits. Or in Surah Baqarah, verse 261, we have the following: مَثَلُ الَّذِينَ يُنْفِقُونَ أَمْوَالَهُمْ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ كَمَثَلِ حَبَّةٍ أَنْبَتَتْ سَبْعَ سَنَابِلَ. The example of those who give in their wealth in the path of God is the example of a seed that brings forth shafts of wheat. Right. So in this verse, we see also that God ascribes this production of these shafts of wheat to a seed, right? So it ascribes certain effects to something other than God. The question arises as to how we can reconcile these two beliefs with one another. The answer to this is quite simple, and that's that we immediately ascribe these effects to these beings, but because these beings are essentially dependent upon God, these effects eventually and ultimately stem from God. God is the ultimate cause of them and their creator, and therefore neither of these two beliefs contradict one another. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. I'm your host, Shiraz Agha. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Around the World with Reporters.
After a long hunger strike going beyond 100 days to protest against his detention without charge or trial, Palestinian prisoner Maher al-Akhras has been finally freed. The Israeli authorities released al-Akhras from the Israeli hospital of Qablan, where he was held for subsequent worsening of his health condition. He arrived at Al-Najah hospital in the West Bank city of Nablus following his release by Israeli authorities. After final medical examinations, he was moved to his hometown, Silat al-Dahr, north of the occupied West Bank. In a press statement, al-Akhras thanked the Palestinian people for the solidarity actions and insisted that gaining rights and liberty are only achieved through fighting.
Praise be to God that I am now among my family and my people in Nablus, and that God willing, we will get rid of the occupation with the mighty wills of our people and live from victory to victory until we reach a greater victory and liberate Palestine.
Israel arrested al-Akhras in July over accusations of being a prominent member of the Jihad resistance group, which he denied. He immediately started his hunger strike, demanding that he should either be prosecuted for clear charges or be released. Israel at first refused to deal with his demands, but when he was at the verge of death, the Israeli High Court ruled that if al-Akhras ended his hunger strike, his administrative detention would not be renewed upon its expiration on 6th of November. Prominent figures who rushed to welcome al-Akhras praised his encouragement in what they described as defeating the occupation's authorities. Administrative detention involves no indictment, no revelation of confidential evidence, and no trial or judgment of the accusations against the prisoner. Hundreds of Palestinian prisoners are languishing in Israel's jails without charge or trial under the illegal so-called administrative detention. The inmates say their hunger strike is a bet to have their voice heard and to force the Israeli regime to end this illegal policy. Reports say more than 7,000 Palestinians are held in Israeli jails. Maher al-Akhras has achieved victory through his hunger strike, and he's free today. Experts say his battle definitely gives other Palestinian prisoners under administrative detention a glimmer of hope, enabling them to go on with their actions and their fight for justice that aim to get back their rights in Israeli jails.